This is What Does It Profit? And I'm your host, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. In this show, we talk about value, the social and moral value of business. Each episode, each guest will bring me a little closer to finding out what does it profit. Last week, we talked to a hedge fund investor who believes that if practiced with intention, finance can be a force for good in society. Okay, you're not in finance, so you think these issues don't apply to you? How businesses are financed has a ripple effect on all aspects of society. Take the 2008 mortgage meltdown as a case in point. So where do we go from here? In late 2020, the Business Roundtable, or what I like to call the CEO Club, announced something extraordinary.
We're now joined by Joshua Bolton. He is the president and CEO of the Business Roundtable, a lobbying group that represents nearly 200 of the world's largest companies.
The purpose of a corporation is to serve all of its stakeholders, its customers, its employees, its communities, and its shareholders. But it means taking care of all of your stakeholders, because in the very long run, you can't take care of your shareholders unless you've taken care of your customers, employees, and communities as well.
In 2020, J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon's tenure at the helm of the Business Roundtable expired. Doug McMillon, the CEO of Walmart, steps in 2020 for a two-year term. But what about this whole new way of doing business? Well, fast forward to 2021, and there's been an effort to put the stakeholder governance paradigm to the test at J.P. Morgan. And J.P. Morgan's board of directors said no. We're not switching our corporate governance structure to a stakeholder-focused entity. Granted, this proposal warrants a deeper discussion that we're not going to have today, but the whole issue got me thinking. It's time for an update on where we are on this new vision for a stakeholder approach to corporate governance. Let's talk with someone very familiar with what's been going on, Reuters corporate governance reporter Jessica DiNapoli. And now let's welcome to What Does It Profit, Jessica DiNapoli. Jessica, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. You're in New York in the middle of a global pandemic. How are you?
I'm good. I mean, it's been an interesting 11 months, but overall, the city still has the life and the energy that it had before the pandemic. So I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy to have you here on the podcast. In your normal work as a reporter, you're on the phone, I suspect, and online all the time. Are there any differences during COVID?
Absolutely. One of the biggest changes is that it's a lot harder to go out and meet new contacts. So I've had to do so online and over the phone. So that's a massive change.
Well, you know, from the outsider's perspective, it hasn't really slowed you down. I read a piece that you published a few weeks ago on the topic of corporate governance after the 2019 Business Roundtable pledge. Tell our listeners about that article.
So that was an article that we began working on last fall to examine whether or not companies that signed the Business Roundtable pledge on the purpose of a corporation, on whether or not they actually changed their behavior after signing this pledge.
Tell us more about how that might have come together or why that was such a big deal.
The pledge at the time it was signed in August 2019 was quite a big deal because companies to date have primarily existed to serve their shareholders, generate profits for shareholders. This pledge said that companies actually exist to serve all of their stakeholders. And that put shareholders on the same playing field as employees, communities, suppliers, and customers.
Well, who makes that happen? I mean, you've got a couple hundred CEOs who decide one day that they're going to do this. I imagine that there was a lot of conversation going on around this. Who were some of the emerging leaders that made that happen?
So the chairman of the Business Roundtable at the time, Jamie Dimon, he was kind of the face of it, but the Business Roundtable changed it because there has been a lot of talk about what corporations, what their role is in society. They're under a lot of pressure to do more to help people, especially now in the time of the pandemic.
Sure. So we've got Jamie Dimon, who is the CEO of JP Morgan, which was a bank I spent a little bit of time in before I became a business ethicist and podcast host. So I guess as an insider for a bit there, I don't really see that as all that unexpected, but it was pretty brave.
Yeah, it was brave in a way for the CEOs to sign their names on this. It did get backlash from some progressive leaning activists that this was mostly a PR stunt and that there was no real way to make sure that companies were actually following through on leveling the playing field for all of their stakeholders.
Let's talk a little bit about that. So you've got this pledge that comes out. It's non-binding. It's not legally enforced. I mean, have you heard any of the backstory about whether or not these CEOs had even consulted their boards or had talked to their management about this?
There was actually a study done at Harvard where they looked into seeing how many of the CEOs ran it by their boards first. Harvard contacted every single company that put their name on the document, and only 50 got back. And of that 50, one had run it by their board. A lot of the other CEOs were like, well, we kind of operate this way already, or we have great relationships with our boards, and they would trust us to do something like this. So that was their reasoning for not checking or running it by their boards.
Well, okay, so you've got a little bit of pushback by these activist investors. One of the names that comes to mind is Just Capital. Tell our listeners about who they are and what we were hearing from them and what maybe we're continuing to hear from them.
So Just Capital is a progressive-leaning organization that looks into how businesses are doing. They believe in stakeholder capitalism, which the Business Roundtable pledge is an outgrowth of. They rank businesses. They actually found that business roundtable companies have done better in response to the pandemic than some of their peers. They were one of the few groups that thought that the business roundtable pledge made a difference for these companies.
Wow, sounds like it could be a potential future guest on What Does It Profit?
Yeah, definitely.
So you've talked a little bit about academics looking at this. We're talking about these activists, but it's gotten the attention of Congress. Tell us a little bit more about the likes of Elizabeth Warren and some of the things we're hearing on Capitol Hill.
Sure. So last year, around the time of the one-year anniversary of this, Elizabeth Warren decided to look into it to see what companies had actually done. And she came to the conclusion that they hadn't done very much. So she wrote them letters. She asked them for more information. And I'm not sure how much she's gotten from them. We also, in our reporting, came across letters signed by Warren, Bernie Sanders, written by Sherrod Brown, asking AT&T, who is a pledge as well, why they laid people off while signing the pledge and continuing with their dividend.
All right. Now, this is a part of the story that, again, caught my eye. You talk in depth about this story and about an activist hedge fund, Elliott Investment Management, and their engagement with AT&T. So this is storytelling time. Tell us about how it got started and how the whole thing has worked itself out.
So in 2019, when the world was normal before the pandemic, Elliott showed up in the stock of AT&T.
Okay, can I stop you there? Can I stop you there? Tell our audience a little bit about Elliott.
Elliott Investment is a large hedge fund. They manage about $40 billion in assets. They're known for being aggressive. What they do is they buy the stock of companies and then they become a major shareholder, and it gives them kind of a platform to push for change at a company. With Elliott, usually the change is focused on driving shareholder returns. They think they're buying the stock low. They come in, they shake things up, and they anticipate that the shares will rise. Okay. After their changes are put in place.
Now, Jessica, that's really important because our listeners are perhaps more hopeful that hedge funds could serve a more public good kind of purpose. So Elliott falls in the other category, which is perhaps what gives to some hedge funds a bad name.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you spoke to Elliott when they started this campaign at AT&T, they did say that these changes would help everybody at AT&T. But there was a strong focus when they came into AT&T, when they bought up the shares, on maintaining payouts, selling businesses of AT&T, and focusing on shareholders.
Okay, so here we have the pandemic. How does AT&T respond to the dynamics of how that impacts their business? I'm pushing you along in this story.
So first of all, I'll just set the stage a little bit. Elliot shows up, AT&T pretty much caves to their demands fairly quickly. They reach an agreement within a couple months and agree to look into selling assets and other things that Elliot asked for. Fast forward to the pandemic, AT&T, their stock crumbles. Their movie business is particularly hit, and they have to back away from some of the things that Elliot ended up asking for, including continued buybacks, which is basically like putting money directly in the pocket of shareholders.
Right. Okay. So then what happens? Now you have decided to say, hey, is this consistent with what the Business Roundtable pledge is? I mean, is that kind of what you're trying to investigate?
Yeah, that's why we looked at AT&T, because there was so much going on there. They signed the Business Roundtable pledge, promising, vowing to look at all stakeholders, and then within months agreed to a plan by one of the most well-known aggressive hedge funds. We found that they were in a really tough position. They raised their dividend early last year, and then they did end up having to lay off a number of people. And that's how they ended up coming under the scrutiny of some of the Congress people like Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. So tell our listeners a little bit about the fallout from that.
So the union at AT&T was very unhappy with the layoffs in the midst of the pandemic. They also were unhappy with how AT&T dealt with Elliot. And they were outspoken about it. So they definitely came under pressure from their union. Other than that, I mean, their share price is also pretty depressed right now. But other than that, I'm not sure they have faced any other repercussions.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll say it. I think it's forced some conversations like the one we're having today on our show about thinking about the realities of how this kind of pledge would be lived out and worked out in management of companies. And so I think these are the kinds of case studies that kind of test your mettle to see how far is this actually going to be able to go when you're managing a large global company, that when you make large global statements, forces you to kind of think about the practical realities of how it gets implemented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
We talked a minute ago about how the Harvard study identified kind of whether or not there was buy-in at the company level before these proclamations were made. And then we found out that not so much. But now what are boards saying? What are you hearing at the board level? Any chatter?
So from the outside, there is for sure still pressure on companies to treat workers right. Inside the boards, I have still heard that the primary focus of a company is to generate profits for their shareholders. It's kind of like a legal requirement. It's part of their fiduciary duty to shareholders. So it is still a significant focus for companies to serve shareholders. And the flip side of that is that without serving shareholders, without generating profits and having a successful business, you can't really provide for your employees or the communities. So the two kind of go hand in hand. And I think it's something that companies worry a lot about. One thing that we did see this year is we saw one of the biggest companies to date convert to a public benefit corporation, which is still a for-profit company, but they've changed their articles of incorporation to include doing positive things or benefiting employees, benefiting their communities. So that is a change that we've seen this year.
Oh, that's interesting. Can you tell our listeners who they are?
The name of the company is called Viva. It's a technology firm. They have a market cap of $45 billion.
I'm very interested in this, perhaps because we don't have enough data yet, but do you think that that will make more options for public capitalization of social purpose kind of organizations?
I think it could encourage more companies to do the same. I don't think their stock took a hit during the conversion. I think people might feel encouraged by it.
Yeah, so I guess time will tell. We'll have to have you back in another year and a half and see how the winds are blowing. But in the meantime, I have to ask you the quintessential What Does It Profit podcast question, which is this aspiration to reorient corporate governance. What does it profit, or how does it benefit the common good?
It should benefit the common good quite a bit if companies follow through and do it, because it's moving the focus of a board and a corporation away from the kind of whims of Wall Street. Every quarter, companies are telling analysts on conference calls what their forecasts are, how they came in, their stock price reacts violently if anything is amiss. In theory, this reorientation of corporate governance, if it happens, should benefit everyone. That's why it started, because outsiders of the corporate world felt that companies had become too focused on Wall Street, on hitting quarterly revenue and profit numbers. If there is this kind of more holistic embrace of this kind of stakeholder capitalism, if it's successful, be good for the planet, the world.
Let's take as a jumping off point that happy place, and let's tell our listeners more about where they can find some of this great reporting that you're doing. How can our listeners find you?
You can find me on Reuters.com. Our articles get picked up around the world, anywhere from the New York Times to Business Insider to publications in Asia. I'm on Twitter.
Yeah, tell us where we can find you on Twitter.
Just my name, at Jessica DiNapoli.
Jessica, you have been very generous with your expertise and could talk to you all day, but this is definitely not the format. We're so glad you found some time to talk with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to What Does It Profit? Thanks to those who've gotten the word out about the show. This week, I want to draw your attention to the podcast Uncertain Things, the show where Adam and Vanessa, two self-described jaded journos, talk about what's wrong in the world. And in my case, what could be right. This week, I'm talking to Uncertain Things about my ethics work and the belief that all of us have some meaningful role to play in life. And we all have a moral responsibility to ask ourselves from time to time, what does it profit? Check out Uncertain Things wherever you listen to podcasts. In our next episode, we're going to talk to someone who has helped create some of the most significant tools for activists who want to promote new paradigms for corporate democracy. Next on What Does It Profit? Legendary corporate gadfly and dean of the shareholder activist movement, James McRitchie.
I've had much more effectiveness inside the corporation because when I worked for the government, I'm not here to represent myself. I'm here to represent the department and the administration. So that's what you're going to get out of me. Whereas now I'm not a slave to anybody. You know, I'm free to say whatever I feel.
Until next time, follow us on social media to keep up with the show and to help us build the What Does It Profit community. We're hanging out mostly these days on LinkedIn and Twitter. And please don't forget to subscribe and tell your friends about the show. You can meet our team and sign up for our weekly newsletter on our website, whatdoesitprofitpodcast.com. What Does It Profit is hosted and written by me, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. This episode was produced by Lucy Wang. Executive producer is Jordan Gaspore. Special thanks to our talented interns, Niels, Hannah, and Sean. Other team members and our long and illustrious group of friends and supporters can be found at whatdoesitprofitpodcast.com. Before I let you go, let me remind you to never stop asking yourself, what does it profit?